It's Andy Parks live from the Washington Times on 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT, and it's a pleasure to welcome to the program for the first time in 2013, Stephen Dinan, Washington Times political editor. Happy New Year, Stephen.
You know, as I was driving home, I was going to say yesterday, but I was actually early this morning from the Capitol, I was realizing it. Since I've been here all through all of this stuff, I didn't even realize that we'd actually really turned over the new year. I was thinking, oh, man, now I actually have to start writing 2013. That just finally hit me like a day later than everybody else.
Yeah. All right, so fiscal cliff averted? I don't know what to make of all of this. I was shell-shocked watching last night because I don't know where – I don't know where all the twists and the turns began and how we ended up getting what we got. I mean, the White House declares a victory in this. I guess they got it, right?
Yeah, they got just about everything they wanted. Now, having said that, it's probably a very temporal victory. I would say this is probably the high water mark for the administration. You know, from now on, they certainly can't come back and go for more rate increases, tax rate increases. They can try and squeeze out more money out of loopholes and deductions, but Republicans are pretty intent on pumping that money back into lowering tax rates from now on out, you know, sort of flattening the tax code. So I sort of have a feeling that this is the high water mark of Obama on the tax issue, and from here on out, he goes back on defense. Now, you know, he spent the last 2 years on defense fighting spending cuts and limiting those. He actually undid a bit of those spending cuts, the sequesters, in this deal by replacing some of the automatic cuts with tax increases. So that was definitely a victory for him. But, you know, from here on out, that's going to be the big one of the big fights. You know, there are two ways to look at it. First of all, is just sort of what's in this bill, but more is what are the next fights? And we're about to face another sequester cliff here in 2 months. We're about to face the debt crisis in 2 months, and then in 3 months we have the annual spending bills. Remember, they only passed them for 6 months this time around, so we have another full 6 months in the fiscal year beginning April 1st. Those bills are due by April 1st, and so we have a government shutdown showdown looming as well. So three new cliffs that we are already staring at after getting past this one.
All right. Yeah, because my initial response was, wait a minute, this is a good deal for America? $1 in cuts for every 41 taken in? How does that work?
Well, so those numbers are not exactly not exactly correct. I haven't done the exact ratio, but there are part of the problem is that you have this bill ends up deepening the deficit by $4 trillion. That's $4 trillion compared with what would have happened under current law, because under current law, tax rates were scheduled to rise and the sequesters were scheduled to go into effect. Everybody up here on Capitol Hill has been calling this a tax increase because it allows the tax rates to rise for the wealthiest, but those were going up under current law. What this is, it's a $4 trillion unpaid-for tax cut and spending, which means, you know, we've just, thanks to this bill, added $4 trillion to the deficit instantly. So, you know, there are a whole bunch of different ways to look at this, which is why you had such a crazy vote yesterday. Some folks were looking at this like, wow, we just blew a hole in the deficit. We can't vote for this. Other people looked at it as, wow, we just saved the economy by keeping tax rates low. Now we'll have to try and find a way to actually come up with offsets in the future, but we're not going to do that now. So,
yeah.
You know, it's a very complex vote. There are a lot of sort of goodies for various industries and people in it that may have caused some people to vote for it. It has the unemployment insurance that the president fought for. So a lot of people got goodies in it. Nobody got what they wanted.
All right. So I'm looking at some of the goodies you mentioned. $331 million for railroads, $430 million for Hollywood through special expensing rules, $70 million for NASCAR by extending a 7-year cost recovery period for certain motorsports racing track facilities. Where do you come up? $59 million for algae growers? Where does all this stuff come from, and how does it happen so quickly?
So I actually wrote a story about this morning. There's Congress even has a name for that list that you just came up with. It's a perennial debate, and it's called the tax extenders debate. There are about 200 loopholes and deductions and whatnot that Congress carries on every year. They just carry them year to year to year. And these are the loopholes and deductions and tax breaks that everybody went into this fight saying, that's what we got to focus on.
Right.
We got to get rid of those. We got to cull that list. You know, they're talking about going after the mortgage interest deduction, child tax, all these tax credits. In the end, instead, all we did was we raised the rates on the very wealthiest and extended a lot of those loopholes. President Obama, in his speech the other night, I guess this would be New Year's Eve, so 2 days ago, when he came out in front of that middle class audience. It was very interesting. He says, look, we got to go after these deductions. From now on, we're going to go after those special tax breaks that the wealthy get, and then went on to tout a lot of the special tax breaks, including his green energy tax break. So this is the classic fight here, and this is why Washington is so gridlocked and can't make any headway on the deficit, because every single person has their own tax breaks that they like and the ones they dislike, and so Congress ends up protecting all the tax breaks and horse trading them.
Hmm. All right, now, I want to get to the actual vote, because there were a couple of strange things. One, Eric Cantor and his relationship with John Boehner. Is that strained, is there something going on behind the scenes? Cantor voted against it. Boehner went with it. Earlier in the day, Cantor said he had a problem with it. The focus last night was trying to see if the two would actually walk into the chamber together. Is there something going on in the background? Could he be challenging John Boehner?
No, he's not. I actually don't know if they walked in the chamber together, but they walked into the meeting, the caucus meeting together, when the House Republicans met privately yesterday a couple different times, to try and sort all this out. He's not challenging him. This is just, you know, Boehner sort of after saying, hey guys, we're going to take a vote on this, he sort of had to do this, first of all, for his relationship with Mitch McConnell, and second of all, in order to be an honest broker if he needs to negotiate with the White House in the future. You know, it was going to pass, so the House Speaker sort of needed to be there on top of that vote with the majority of the House, even if it wasn't with the majority of his conference. Cantor, of course, doesn't have that. The House is a curious thing, and the House Speaker is actually in the constitutional order of succession. You know, it's different than a majority leader position. Harry Reid is the leader of a party caucus. John Boehner is the leader of the entire House of Representatives, and he has a slightly different obligation. I make the Reid comparison because that's also Eric Cantor is in the same position as Harry Reid. He is the party leader.
Mm-hmm.
It works out that John Boehner, as the top Republican who becomes the Speaker, is also the leader of the Republican Party. But his is not as straightforward a political role in that he also is the head of the entire House of Representatives. And Speakers take that role very seriously. So I can see why Boehner did what he did. Maybe a more interesting vote in all of this is Paul Ryan voting for it.
You know,
you look at the 2016 potential Republican presidential candidates. You had Marco Rubio and Rand Paul, who were one of, you know, only five Republicans in the Senate to vote against it. You know, so they bucked their Senate colleagues, most of whom said this is fine, and they said no, this is not good. And then you move over to the House, where you have most House Republicans voting against it, and you have Paul Ryan standing out by voting for it. So those are the sorts of votes that I'm more interested in. The Boehner-Cantor, I think, you know, they each voted ways that they had to, and I'm not surprised by any of those. I am surprised by the difference on the for the potential presidential candidate.
Okay, but you are staying with the idea there will be no challenge to the leadership position that Boehner holds.
No, we may, you know, you may see a couple of folks abstain when they vote for Speaker tomorrow or vote for another candidate, but I'd be absolutely shocked if John Boehner is in any sort of danger here.
Mm-hmm. As shocked as people getting their paychecks a couple of weeks from now and actually seeing more money taken out as a result of the payroll taxes kicking back up.
You know, that's, I don't know how close people pay to, how close attention people pay to their paychecks, but that's, you know, the one part about this is that all the padding, back padding going on up here, just about everybody is likely to see a tax increase unless all their child tax credits and those sorts of credits outweigh the $2,000 on average that they, or I guess $1,000 on average that they would have gotten from the payroll tax cut. So, yeah, I mean, this deal is so complex, everybody's going to take time for everybody to sort of figure out how it affects them. But not a good deal for the deficit right now, and it's not a particularly great deal for any taxpayers. Mm-hmm. In that way, maybe it's the beginning of what's going to be some very bitter medicine if Congress ever does get serious about the deficit.
Yeah. All right. So go ahead, jump on your airplane, head to Hawaii for a few days, get a vacation, huh? Guess not.
You know, I imagine there are a lot of members of Congress and a lot of reporters who suffered through the last week watching them all who are very envious of the president being able to do that.
Yep. All right, Stephen, great stuff. Thank you. Welcome to 2013, just in case you missed it.
I'll write it down 10 times to make sure I know.
See you later. Thanks. Stephen Dynan, Washington Times political editor. 5:28, 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT. Andy Parks, live from the Washington Times. Stay tuned.